This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast.
Yep.
I'm joined here with quite the crew. I've got a special guest of honor. You know, pretty much any time I've ever put you, Pablo, put you in a video, this last one, put out a couple podcasts, I always get, we need more Pablo.
That's nice.
It's literally what everybody says. We need more flipping Pablo. So we're here to be a podcast for the people.
Yeah.
And bring them more Pablo. So we've got Pablo.
No,
Esquivel.
Me, there you go. Perfectly pronounced.
Did so, I?
Yes.
Yeah,
to me, it's an honor, man. I mean, it's just an honor being around you. And now that you gave me the opportunity to meet Walter and also Brett, which I used to call Greg, remember?
Yeah.
For some reason. I don't know why. I was like, hey, Greg. And it's like, no, his name is Brett. And so it's an honor, man. I mean, you guys really got it going on right here, you know, so... So to me, it's it's very special, man. This is a very special moment.
It is. Yeah, man. I mean, I feel honored every single time I get to be on a podcast with these next two guys. We got Walter here from Tallahassee.
I thought you were for sure going to say Chasing Tails when you said from.
We got Walter here from Chasing Tails. One of these days, we're not going to be able to make jokes because we're going to be way too far along in podcasts to do that. But for now,
yeah,
let's keep doing that, boys. And we got Brett Mashburn. Fellas, this is going to be episode, what, like five or six? Episode five. So this is going to be the first one that we've really sat down and we didn't have an agenda.
Yeah.
How are you boys feeling about that?
Very anxious. That does not do me any good. Like, I'm worried we're going to get off on a tangent. But the good news is we've got Pablo here. And so any tangent he goes down is going to be absolute gold. So I'm just going to keep feeding him bait and just let him run with it and basically just enjoy editing this in the tail end of things. Because, Pablo, I got to be honest with you, man. I'm one of those guys that told Parker, every time you're on a podcast. It's just gold. And I remember the complete and total appreciation and gratitude you had for what we get to experience and take for granted on a day in, day out basis. And I was like, that's the kind of guy I want to hear every single week. So thrilled that you're here.
I appreciate it a lot. Like I said, I guess, and I discussed this with Parker one time. When I just got into it and I started watching the videos, I came across like Alabama public land hunting and all that stuff. It was kind of like it was difficult to find somebody that I actually liked. Then I came across Parker. And man, I was really jealous. The reason that I was jealous, not because he was killing deer, not at all. I was jealous because on every single video that he was putting out there, it looks like you guys were having so much fun. Like him, Mr. Randall, friends and family. It was looking like fun. And that's what I was jealous of. I was like, man, I want to be surrounded by a group of guys that can help me not only grow up as a person, but I can hold it if you want. There you go.
You hold it yourself.
Yeah.
Hold your own.
No, but for real, like surrounded by a group of guys that not only gonna help me grow up as a person, but will, you know, let me enjoy the way they're supposed to be enjoyed, which is like at the end of the day,
the size shooting of the, does. That's whatever. Really that's what it is.
Yes, or just the company, man. I mean, that's what it's all about. So I'm very honored that you welcome me in the circle and introduce me to such a great guys. And like I said, man, people keep. Which is overwhelming sometimes to me. Like, I'm like, wow, man, I feel really thankful. Everybody keeps sending me kind messages on social media. They're like, man, you know, keep it up and this and that. So that means a lot to me because this is the kind of fun that I was talking about, that you can sit down with some guys, been struggling. Not always has been sunny and breezy, you know. Been struggling, been doing things the wrong way, been making mistakes, and eventually overcome those, which will lead to a success hunt, you know, which at the end of the day, regardless if it's a spike, a doe, or a big old buck, you know, I mean, a success hunt is related to every individual, I would say, you know.
Yeah. I'm telling you guys, y'all haven't lived until you've been on a hunt with Pablo. It's fun. It's fun stuff. It's, you know, it's kind of funny. I had Pablo on an Instagram live the other day. We were out shooting our bow.
Mm-hmm.
And, just like right when I hit record, Pablo, like, just like, I think it's actually turned into an issue with the release. Like the release is just like prematurely releasing.
Something is going on. You know, the release, mine used to be the one that is called the close hinge or something like that. This one is just a hook. And when you shoot, the thing gets open like that, but it gets like in a semi-closing position like this, right? So you believe that the thing is locked because when you pull the string, it will actually have some tension. But at the end of the day, like it's like a hinge release for like a 20-pound or something like that. So when you're going drawing on your bow, the thing would just release out of nowhere. It's like a pow. And dude, that day my lip got purple, but I just stuffed it out because Parker's like you're on live on Instagram. And I was like, hey, just another day right here on the shooting range. And I just slap myself on the face. I slapped the Hispanic crap out of me, you know, but I tell you what, dude, it hurt, man. I mean, it really did. But
it was perfect timing. Yeah. It really was.
And if you play back, you hear the smack. I mean, ain't no light, like such a, like, you know, a little bit, it's like, bow, you know? Like, so, and then I did it again. And I called Parker and I said, I just did it again. He said, what do you mean? And I said, yeah, my mouth was kind of swollen. And I was like, yeah, new release. Because, I mean, and good deal, dude. Good deal that it was in a controlled environment kind of practice thing. Think about having a deer in front of you. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you just smack yourself. I would lose it. You know?
That's the shot that it would happen on, too. Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. That'd be the time that it happened.
Yeah, I would throw my ball at him or something like that, I guess, being pissed off. I don't know. But yeah, now talking about that, I want to bring a topic and see what you guys think.
Okay.
And this is for amateur people like me. I know it's different opinions out there.
I'm for anybody who doesn't know Pablo is not an amateur. This is not,
I am.
He thinks he is. He talks like he is. He is, in fact, not.
I tell you right now, he doesn't call deer in like an amateur, because I've never seen somebody use trees as big as he does to call in whitetails. So
Pablo's only calling mature deer.
Like aggressive, kind of like a, the one that is like a fixing to give you two pieces of biscuit, you know? And because the thing is, I was using rocks and all that, making it like a little bit more real. Out of nowhere, Parker's about to be done with the rattling sequence, and I ain't got nothing. It's like, I'm going to throw my rifle, or I'm going to throw this log right here. I'm like, but I got to do something. I just send it, you know? And it sounded very realistic. Like, it was stumbling down the hill, but apparently, scared him off.
It made the cut for the video, though.
It did. Yes, it did.
Speaking of which, we've got a very important thing to do here, Pablo.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a giveaway. You said
yes.
You volunteered a giveaway.
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Yes, we were gonna do a giveaway. Parker didn't know what I was talking about. He was like, "You had a few drinks this morning, you know, like before going home. What was going on?" But no, man. Every people, like I said, everybody leaving a comment on the video about what do they like better, rather being a gun hunt, a bow. Crossbow, what kind of caliber did they shoot? All those things. We're going to give away a brand new Succo hoodie, right?
That's right.
Of course, we're going to randomly select somebody from the comment section. And that's going to, I guess, Parker's going to get in contact with them and just kind of like making sure that's going to fit your correct size and all that stuff. But is one of those things that you just cannot miss the opportunity, man. You have to leave a comment out there because you never know.
Well,
you never know.
We've got, last time I looked, we had close to 50-ish comments. Does that still look right to you fellas?
Yep.
How many?
We had 44 at lunch. 44 at lunch. So we got
61. So there's 61.
Christ.
61 wow. Right now.
That is amazing. So
here's what we're going to do, okay? I need you to pick a number between 1 and 61.
37.
37. All right. Y'all talk about something else for 30 seconds. Walt, off the cuff, ask Pablo a question.
Okay, so
Pablo, go ahead. My question for you is, are you going to take a knife with you when you go hunting moving forward?
Dude, that was a nightmare, but I swear to God, like from now on, I'm going to keep with me a knife and a lighter. Just in case, you never know when you might need a lighter, but a knife is going to be like, I'm going to have one in my pocket and one in my backpack from now on, because that was not fun at all. And Parker called me. He's like, "Hey, did you shot him?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You're like 2 miles away from the boat." And I said, "Yeah." And I don't have my pocket knife. He was like, "Ah, good luck." And I said, "Ah, it'd be all right." Shoot, man. As soon as I started going up them ridges and all that, yeah, that's when I was feeling it. And I was like, man, this is never happening again. And it happened to me next week. But fortunately, I was just, I was shooting my bow. So I had my broadhead. And that's why I just used my broadhead to gut my deer out, you know? And
what broadhead were you using?
The Magnus Stinger. It's just kind of like a little bit long. Yes, there you go. That's the one. So for those at home watching, you know, just in case, this will actually work as a pocket knife and you can go to deer.
I did the same thing in Tennessee this year.
Did you?
Pablo, we need a how-to tutorial on how to field dress a deer with a broadhead. We're going to put it unlisted for the Patreon group.
Yeah, man.
Without hurting yourself.
Yeah, I did it. That's optional. You actually took a picture of that, though.
Oh, yeah. You came over here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure did.
I came over here because I said, I got to show Parker. You know, it was a good doe. And literally, I said, here goes nothing. I'm just going to go climb up there. Remember? Like 30 minutes later. Yeah, like
10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. And like 30 minutes later, it's like, I got a beagle down on the ground. And it was amazing, though.
Pablo, he don't hesitate to shoot a doe. So you said 37, right?
Yep.
Is that good?
Yeah, 37.
All right, I've counted down to 37 on here. And
who isn't?
The winner is a Louisiana. He either lives in Los Angeles or Louisiana.
No kidding.
I'm going to guess it's Louisiana. But it is Dennis Hart, 7818. has won a Soko hoodie. I'm going to comment on his comment.
Dude, Dennis, go ahead and read it out loud.
And let Dennis know. What am I reading out loud?
He's a comment.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that'd be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Love your content. Used to live in L.A. I don't know if that means Louisiana.
Lower Alabama. Or
Lower Alabama.
Alabama. You would know, Brett.
Come out.
Used to live in Lower Alabama. Always had a good time hunting down there. That does make perfect sense for the video. Well, Dennis Hart is going to be the proud new owner of a
Soko hoodie.
Freaking sweet.
That is amazing. We've got to talk about this because I think Pablo may have given us our next like giveaway idea. I think I can see something brewing here long term.
Okay.
What is
I think we need to look at picking a comment on each of the hunting videos that we post and sending them some kind of swag package.
Yeah, definitely. Like that's a really good idea.
I like that idea.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I like the idea. Like, you know, yeah, definitely. I love it. You know,
I've got an idea. What if we just did a giveaway when people left a comment on the YouTube videos?
Well, I was gonna say like that's gonna be a lot. I was gonna say that's gonna be a lot of giveaways every week. You know, but no, I mean like anytime.
He sounds great, Parker. He really sounds great.
Anytime that somebody, let's say, you put one of these, somebody kills a buck.
Okay.
Or something like that. And then you go ahead and do a giveaway. When somebody
kills a deer. If there's a deer kill, we do a giveaway.
Yeah, I think that's what we should do. Yeah, deer kill which giveaway.
Is,
campfire
which is used to every video.
This is good. We can lean into this.
Mm-hmm.
Just so everybody knows, this is exactly what this is a verbal audio representation of the Soko group text message every day. Like this is nonstop. We're brainstorming ideas for you guys. So, oh, and speaking of which, talking about giveaways, Todd, listen, that is your package going out in the mail. You'll probably have that by the time you hear this podcast next week. But
yeah, we gave that away last week. Zingers, right?
Yep, Zinger Fletchings, and then I've got pork chops, turkey vest done up because I'm tired of hearing him complain about that. And I got a package going to BZ. He bought poor guy bought my Bottomland hat and didn't get it. And so I'm giving him mine because I can't wear Richardson 112. So I'm sending him mine as well. But kind of
professional things going on here at Soko.
But along the lines of that, Patreons, we'll just go ahead and make a really rough segue into this because giveaways are what we're talking about here. If you missed it last episode, you need to go back and listen to the Tethered giveaway episode. We did an interview with Greg and Ernie. It was a really good interview. And as always, I mean, those guys are remarkably generous at all times. They offered to give away one of the first carbon fiber Predator platforms to our Patreon. Hey,
grief.
So yeah, I know. When he said that to Parker and I about like lost it, Pablo, I couldn't.
Yes.
So if you want to be in on that, if you want to support the show, if you want to get a free hat, and let me tell you this right now, the free hat that Parker has designed for you beats the brakes off any free hat that you've gotten from this channel before. I mean, it is envious. Go check out Patreon. The show notes are in the link below. And one of the things we do to say thank you is we give you shout outs. So we're going to pick four more. We may have to up the number here, Parker, because we have so many people signing up. I can't actually churn through them, but Andrew Lang, BDS Outdoors, Trent LaRoe, and Clint Remington want to say thanks to you guys, for signing up. Actually, we'll throw one more in there as well. Paul Eaton. I'm just worried we're not going to be able to get to these guys quickly enough.
I feel like if my last name would have been Remington,
I know
we'd be sitting a lot different right now.
Listen, you know that
I mean?
Dude.
Like, I don't mean that. I don't mean that to like as an insult to my family or my dad or our family name. But if I was the last name Remington, I could have done some stuff.
I could have said if I was last name Escobar,
you would have.
Could have been different.
Things would have been different. Yeah, you're correct.
I know. But. No, you know, so going, yeah, going back to what I was going to ask you something about on the amateur. Oh, I remember. Okay, I was going to bring this up to you guys because I know I'm an amateur and you know it. I'm just kind of like walking the right path, okay? After many, many years of failure and heartbreakers and all that, I finally feel like I kind of understand a little bit what am I doing. So there's many different opinions on this subject. One of them is, no, you don't. Some of them, yes, you do, which is early summer scouting.
Early summer scouting? Like, are you talking about like June or just summer scouting?
Let's
in general.
Let's wrap it up in summer scouting. Yeah.
Okay.
What is your guys' take on this one?
Well, I think I'm of the opinion, and I think Brett's going to have a lot to say on this. I'm just going to have a little to say on this. if you haven't ever been to a place, you know, like if you move to a new place or whatever, like to get your bearings on a place, yeah, go scout it in the summer. Like if that's the time that you have to go and learn, I'm kind of in a different situation, you know, like yeah. That's kind of the only time I'm not in those woods. And so I take advantage of the summertime to spend with family and do all that kind of stuff.
Because
I have a pretty good understanding, but I also used to scout it in the summer too.
You have a built-in GPS map of the place in your head already.
Yeah.
That's what it gives you the advantage. But like for somebody like me, it could be really tricky. Because I can go in there in summertime and it's like, oh man, this looks so good right here, this and that. By the time that the season comes along, the place is completely different and I realize that it's a bust, you know. But then if you do post-season scouting, you go and you find all the fresh sign and this and that, but it doesn't necessarily mean a lot of time, like, stays in there for the next season and they keep on going on their traveling behaviors, whatever it's called. But a lot of times it goes away too. So I'm confused with that. And I don't really know, like, if I should put a little bit more effort before or a little bit more effort after. With cameras, I put one camera one time, somebody stole it. And I was about to cry. I was like, you could have took the camera, just leaving the SD. That's the only thing that I wanted to know. Because at the end of the day, it wasn't about the camera itself. It was about just seeing if my knowledge was successful enough to get a deer
right
by. That's what I wanted to know.
What do you think, Brett? I think you got a lot to say on this, mm-hmm. on summer scouting. I know you do it a lot.
Yeah, I do. At a season scouting, like, period. But during the summertime, I'm more or less running cameras, checking stuff for early season. But you kind of opened Pandora's box when you started talking. You were confused a little bit on summer versus post-season scouting.
Yeah.
And personally, I think post-season is the most important. And like you said, you're seeing all the sign that's laid down during the time you can actually hunt deer, per se. And a lot of Alabama and Florida, at least North Florida, the rut is later. So you're seeing all that good rut sign. Well, you can pick up on that right after season, map it, you know, kind of keep that mentally stable. But when it comes into early season, that's not really going to be part of your strategy. You're going to keep that in mind for during season when the pressure gets put on for a month and those deer get pushed into those thicker areas. That's where they're going back to. The areas you're finding in postseason, that's once the pressure gets on, that's where the deer go back into and use it for that. Summertime, they're going to be out because there's no pressure. The best food sources. They're going to hit that shift when they shed their velvet and then the acorns start falling. So kind of in that right before season, like right now, you know, they're getting close to that velvet shed and they're going to make a shift and then your food sources are going to start changing. You're going to have to kind of refine them all over again right now. Like basically go out a couple of weeks before season trying to find good acorns or the food source are hitting right there at early season. But that stuff you find in postseason is going to come into effect more towards maybe the middle you know, depending on when your rut hits, more maybe more in the middle of deer season towards your rut for your postseason stuff that you're finding. Any questions from that?
Dude, that's amazing. That is, Brett, that's really, really amazing. Because, I mean, like I said, I was confused and I was second-guessing myself. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. It's definitely a lesson for me right now. I mean, use it, but be wise. And just, I guess, do you, I don't know, do you get, it happened to me, I get blind with the sign. Like, I get blind. And I see some scrapes and I see some rubs. And I'm like, this is it. It might be 30, 40 yards from the other side of where the sign is. Mm-hmm. And if I should have been up there, could have been a completely different outcome, you know. But in my case, again, and all this will come with experience. Because, you know, y'all remember, you know, I came late to the party. So I'm still learning.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know that, yeah. You moved here from Costa Rica.
There you go.
And what was it, about 12 years ago?
Yeah, actually, next month is going to be 13.
13 years ago?
Yeah, and then I didn't start hunting until I was like mid-20s, maybe upper 20s. And that's because, well, first off, I didn't speak good at all. Well, I'm still learning, you know, but at the time it was a little bit rougher. So everything has been kind of like a process for me. Whenever I start getting better at it, then it's like, okay, now it's time to take the next step. And then I feel prepared, like, okay, I understand the laws a little bit better, because something I know is like ignorance is not an excuse when it comes to wildlife issues around.
Did you ever have things like that? Any weird situations like that?
No, but I did seen a bunch of videos of people getting nailed, you know, and I definitely understand why it's such a like big thing, because, you know, people from other countries doesn't get to do what we do. And a lot of times they don't understand it, but they just don't realize like what a conservation programs they have in this country, like how serious it is. And it's designed for a reason. And the reason has results, which at the end of the day is us being able to go out there and enjoy what we do.
Yeah, you look at it, from a different lens than a lot of us do, for sure. Like, so, I think I grow up in a... Or I guess, grown up looking at it through a lens of, like, it's not been great. Like, we're getting stuff taken away and people coming after this, whatever. But you come over here and you see when it really has hit the fan, like, when it's really bad, you just have you have such a good perspective, man, and you always do. Going back to that video that we just put out, like for me, last season was tough, right? Yes. Like we've talked about that before. I don't have to hash that out anymore on the podcast. It was a hard season. But what I noticed is that hanging out, like going and spending time hunting with you and just really kind of like just going in to have a good time, just going to have fun, no expectations, you know? Yeah. You went out in the middle of the rut, shot that doe, and it was awesome. Yeah. Didn't have a knife, all that, you know, it was great. But it's like, man, it offers me such a fresh perspective of how it should look, you know, like, like I sent you a picture of a buck that I was like, kind of like, you know, whatever, man, he's all right. And you were like, I would do anything to kill the buck like that right now, you know?
Definitely. I mean, it's amazing. Don't get me wrong. Everybody wants to kill a deer. You know, everybody wants to kill a good buck. But, dude, I guess, and we go back to the first podcast. I'm in the process where we actually spoke about this. I'm in the process where I'm just enjoying my trial. I'm just enjoying my run. You know, the first thing that walks in front of me is going to get an arrow.
Dang,
I mean,
right.
It's just that easy. Or a bullet. And a lot of people
are like, well, or both of them.
Or yes, if I can.
If I got both of them, I'd probably do both.
And a lot of people are like, man, you got a lot of wow. And I'm like, I get it. You know, like, I definitely understand. But like, a lot of people is in a different boat and they already earn a lot of deer. They already put a lot of deer on their belt. They already understand the progress a lot better than what I do. And I know if I stop shooting the things that I can shoot, I'm going to get really frustrated, and I'm not going to be able to enjoy the way that I do. And probably the day is going to happen one day. I don't know when, and I don't really care about it. But the day that I can put my hands around a good rack buck, like those back there or something like that, it's probably going to be like a light switch.
Do you hear that, boy?
And that one right there.
I heard him.
Hey, you hear that? Who's pointing at my deer?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take you to my wall.
But I'm
show him your bone, Brett.
Whoa, whoa.
Whoa, take it easy.
Whoa, yeah, let's just back out. That's
one of the
wrong turn road right there. But no, what I'm saying is like that day is probably going to be like the switch when I'm going to be like, okay, now I can start chasing a little bit differently than what I do.
Well, probably what's going to happen is you're probably going to like, because I've seen the kind of spots that you're hunting. I've hunted with you, talked with you a lot about hunting. Like you're just half a step away from really, really finding a good buck. And I know you have already shot a good one. You could recover, but
remember, he was running, took a shot, hit him a little bit back. Couldn't recover. Done deal. Then the year after that, go ahead, Brent.
I was going to say, Pablo, you're also in your phase that you're learning kind of what kind of hunter you are, like what you like, what's your style.
Yeah,
you're still in the process of learning your style of hunting. And once you figure that out, and like you said, you kill a buck or two, a light bulb will, you know, flip and you'll start to really be able to home in on your style of hunting and just take it to that next level at that point.
Yeah, that's
It takes time. I mean, like I've been hunting for 21 years or so.
Wow, that's amazing to me. Because
he's only 22.
Yeah, I know. He looks like
yeah. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, he definitely looks like a 22-year-old. You know?
I really thought Brett was like 25.
Ain't I no did way. Too
until.
I'm fairly older than all y'all.
You are.
You are.
I don't know about Pablo.
Spring chicken right here. You know? Mm-hmm. I think I'm the second because I'm 34.
Yeah. He's got you beat.
I got you beat.
I thought you were about the same year. Age as me and Walt.
Well, that ain't much.
No.
I tell you what.
Hey, I was going to ask you.
And I'm. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, Pablo, like, because I don't know, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners don't know, but like, how'd your deer season go last year? Like, what all did you kill, and just how did your whole year go?
It went really good. Really surprised. I killed 5 does in a spike.
Oh, wow. That's it. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
You killed more than Walt.
Well, just said that's it. Yeah.
Well, I hope more deer than Walt killed in the last 5 years.
And that was all in public. Yeah, that was all in public, like I usually do. I got really lucky several times. And last year, I have 2 heartbreakers, big heartbreakers. Remember, I don't know if I told you guys, one got soaking wet in the morning. I was really cold, so I started walking, came across this thicket, an area that I like it. As I was climbing, it was a big, big deer, rifles on the ground. I mean, he's gone.
So, question. So that happened to you and a big deer come in there. What can you take away from that? Like, what did you learn from that big deer encounter? Was it a different spot than you normally hunt? Was it a different time of day? Like, what can you take away from that to be a better hunter now?
Before y'all start a romance, I just want y'all to know Brett is on my car insurance policy. He's not driving to North Alabama to smash your deer too, Pablo. So you just gonna have to find your own deer crippler. So. Does Pablo know that joke, or did I just like zing one?
Probably past not.
Him? Okay.
Wow. He didn't really watch Chase and
Bell. We'll get back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I have hit 10 with my cars. Well, a long 10? Years. Yes.
Oh.
Remember,
crazy, Pablo.
I'm already on the board for this season.
The average is like
a 1.8-ish
a year.
Yeah. And trust me, man, it's been putting a toe in my pocket. Because, dude, I try to dodge him. I'm like, Jesus Christ, not a boom. You know? And I'm like, I cannot believe. Dude, yeah. And I'm like, I just cannot do. when I took my wife's Camry. Remember?
No.
Well, yeah, I was going to work for some reason. She was going to be off that day. And I said, I'm just going to leave the pickup truck right here. I'm going to take your Camry. And I was this kind of crazy mentality. I was going to work at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was one of those cold January mornings. And I said, man, I wish a big old buck appears in the middle of nowhere and I will total her car, you know? And as I'm thinking that, I just listened to something on the right side. Boom! A doe, man, runs into the car on the passenger side.
I do remember that.
And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I stopped and I was like, what are the odds? Like, and then there she's laying. It was the only house on this country road, like the only one. And there she's laying on their yard dead. And I was like, man, I mean, how come? I was like, where the horn is at? You know? But I just felt bad.
He knocked them off, Pablo.
Yeah. I was like, dude, they're going to wake up and there's going to be a dead deer in their yard. Like, I said, man, I'm just going to have to drag this thing. So, yeah, I just kind of like move it out of the way and that's it. But I also, too, with the 18-wheelers, when I was driving 18-wheeler, yeah, I hit one in Pennsylvania, a little bit of thing, flew off it like a football. I feel so bad for him.
Ready for grand, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was like, geez, you know. But what are you going to do, man? You're not going to stop on an 18-wheeler. And then the second one, I dodged him with the tractor, but he hit the trailer. And I can I say this story real quick?
You can say whatever you want.
And that day, the high was going to be like 40 degrees, right? So I stopped and I said, dang it. And it was no damage, but the thing is all messed up right there. So I said, screw it. And I pulled my pocket knife out and got it out, put it on the catwalk of the truck. I just went on my day. When I was coming back to the yard, almost over with my day, my boss called me. He's like, Jesus Christ, you're the only one that I can think of. Do you or do you not have a dead deer strapped on the tractor? And I was like, I do. You know, he's like, dude, what are you thinking? I said, well, I mean, I wasn't going to let it go to waste. You know, so I just put some bungee cords and strap him up. And I was that's what everybody was looking at my truck. Everybody was like, that dude has a dead deer. And I was like, yeah, I mean, the high was going to be like 40. And, you know, yeah.
Perfectly good reason.
Yeah, perfectly. Just
why not?
Yeah, just fine. And he was like, by the grace of God, park that truck. And I was like, I'm almost at the yard. He's like, okay, get that thing off and get the truck washed tomorrow. And I was like, say no more. You know? But yeah, man.
I don't even know what to say. We're just like, okay, well, who is next?
Walt derailed the conversation or the question I asked.
Yes, that I did.
But like, I was just curious if there was anything you learned from that encounter.
Yes, I did.
Take away
things. One of them, I felt that I walked into a bedding area when they were back because it was already like 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning.
What made you feel like that? What did you see?
Well, as I was walking out, it was a really thick area and I was just easing, like creeping my way into it. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I noticed. It was tremendous amounts of deer poop on the ground, like tremendous, not a lot of browsing. Not a lot of browsing at all, but just tremendous amount of poop. Bitty pockets of open ground here and there. You know, I was like, man, a deer can stand up and walk into one of these openings at any moment. To my surprise, he probably was out throughout the night or something like that, and then he came back early morning and he bedded down. And then while I was doing the noise and all that, he stood up and just kind of like a look me going up in the tree and all that stuff.
So were you hunting outside of that area you thought may have been bedding? Or were you hunting inside of it?
I was hunting inside of it. The thing that I, it's like a point with a, let me see, so Parker can actually translate this kind of wording a little bit better when it comes to the topo.
I'm going
to
be a translator, fellas.
Yeah, so I can show you exactly what the place looks like.
That's what they had to do for me. Don't worry.
So, in that way, you cannot definitely understand because I'd be like, okay, it was kind of like a flat area with a thing like that. So you won't understand it. But
he said it was a flat area.
Hold on. In this case, This is the one. Nope. Hold on. Yeah, it is. This is not. This is this one.
Yep.
Right there. So I walk from there across.
You walked. You walk. It's just a big point. It's a big point with a really, really steep, a really, really steep bluff.
I came down right here, and this is the area. Right here.
Yeah, you're basically what you're looking at. What I'm seeing is,
can I,
like,
put it up there?
Yeah, you can show it to them. You won't be able. Nobody will see it. But you're basically looking at an area with a lot of, like, small benches. Like, all the spur ridges have a bunch of benches, kind of like small point benches off of them with really steep, looks like really steep drop offs on them.
And they could lay there and look out across. There's like a visual plus a thick.
And there, it looks like there's about three of those all in that small area. And a deer could, a buck could really get in there and be bulletproof no matter what wind direction was.
A couple of questions I have, like, was that spot, like, shaded?
Like, it was. It was shaded.
But it was a little open underneath?
No. It was shaded because, like I said, it was a pine thicket that it got thinned. So it was just a few pines here and there, but everything is overgrown. So it was well shaded. Really good, well shaded, but also it was so thick that I don't know where it was, like a little bitty opening right here, and maybe 10 feet later, another opening. And you can tell that it was like small, really delicate trails going through.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that helped me the most, and I guess that's why I didn't get busted right away, a pour was like a couple hours before. Everything was soaking wet, and I was walking really stealthy. So I wasn't crunching leaves. I wasn't crunching sticks. Everything was soaking wet. So I was actually able to ease my way into it. And I learned that, like, right away. I was like, this is a really good example for me. Because like Brett was saying, he's bedding right here. He probably has wind advantage. That's a fact, most likely. But the most important thing is, like, he has that covered advantage. He can bolt out in any direction, and you're barely gonna see the horns moving across it or something like that. So then after that, I walk in this other area. It was very close to the road. As I'm walking in, some people, it's kind of like driving a car or a razor, whatever it was. This was very loud. He probably was bedded somewhere close to the road, and they bump him. And he was running, and I tried to stop him. He's already spooked, and I tried to stop him, and then he got into panic mode and put it on fifth gear and took off. Like, it was no way that you can put a shot on the way that he was running. So I learned right away, like, if he's already in alert and you're trying to stop him or do the regular or something like that, he's actually going to bolt. Gear. Yes. And that was a lesson. And, man, I was about to cry. Like, seriously, I was like, dude, that's too big there, you know. But it was very good because I was like, okay, it means that at least I'm heading the right direction.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, so I think that's a lot of the reason people talk about time in the woods is, number one, because you're learning things all the time just by seeing deer. Like, try to stop a deer that's already on alert. So you learn that. Kind of where a mature buck likes to be in the, you know, the part of the state that you hunt. Now, all those little things is from time in the woods.
Yeah. Because, like, I'm going to go back to the story of the first buck that I would kill. It's a 2.5-year-old 8-pointer. But I remember that day, I never knew what a rub was or a scrape, nothing like that. I remember even, like, dude, no shame. I remember even Googling deer poop because I didn't know how
it looked like.
I didn't know how it looked like. And I was like, yes, this is deer poop. So I was very pumped.
Hey, I will say I don't feel too bad about that because every southern guy I've ever seen out west where there's elk, they're like, what does elk poop look like? You know, like, this is like if you're not, if you don't know it, if you're not from the area,
yeah,
that is a hard thing to figure out.
But man, I got into a video or something talking about transition lines. So there was this really nasty thicket of privilege head. I also didn't know what privilege head was, or a white oak or a red oak. Now, like that, I ended up buying myself a Trees of Alabama book so I can study a little bit. And I like it. I thought that it was a good area. Climb up there around 9:30 in the morning. I got that buck walking towards me, and I was shaking so bad. I can remember. I thought that I was going to have a heart attack. I was shaking so bad that I released the arrow, dude, and I missed him. And, dude, he was like 12, 15 yards at the most. And I missed him, and no shame. I cried, dude, and I cried hard because it was the first time that I actually get to see a buck. Like, I seen nothing but those, and it was never seen before a spike either, nothing. And I cried so hard, man, because I was like, all this hard work. And
how many years have you been hunting at that point?
Three. Yeah, and I have only killed one doe. Yeah. So I went 2 years and almost three seasons without seeing a deer, doing the wrong thing. So I missed. I cried. And I said, screw this. I'm doing this crap again. I'm going home. I went home. My wife was asking me what happened. I was like, you don't understand, you know. I said, I'm never going hunting back again, this and that. But 3 days later, I was off for several days. She was going back to work. She said, you going to go hunting today? I said, no, I'm done. Never doing it again. She said, well, how about you just go out there and walk in the woods? At least get your mind clear, you know? And I said, that ain't going to happen. I'm a man of my word, not doing it. You know, about lunchtime, I said, screw it, you know? I'm going to go. And I just grabbed my bow. Didn't grab my, at the time, I had a climber. One of the heavy ones that it will give you blood clots within 100 yards of your vehicle, you know. So I walk up to the spot where I shot him, dude. And I just kind of like a look around. I was trashing, just walking with careless, didn't care much about it. And I look around where I missed him. And I said, you know what? Man, this is stupid, you know. And I just start walking down. Where I was about 100 yards south, there was a log, and I remember I sat down, kind of like leaned against it. At the time, I didn't know anything about the thermals, and it was like a small ditch with a creek behind me. And there was some tracks and all that. Didn't thought about being crossing, nothing like that, you know. So I didn't know anything. So I just sat down in there, and man. It was like 5 o'clock. It's getting gray. And I swear to God, I was sitting down playing with dirt, like literally. I was like, I'm just going to stay here until it gets dark. I'm just going to get it out of my head. Like, okay, I didn't kill anything. I'm just going to go. Maybe next week I'm going to do better. But I was feeling like literally feeling air going by me this way, coming from north to south. And I bet you it was the thermals on the creek pulling. But I didn't know. So, like I said, I'm just there, and I don't know where I heard something. And I said, that's a squirrel, you know? And I just keep doing my thing. I'm leaning against the log, and there's another log leaning sideways, like this way. So my head is just kind of like tucked up in there, like a blind, pretty much. And I said, man, hold on a second. That ain't no squirrel, you know, because it sounds really loud. And I look up, and dude, that deer is maybe about 10 yards from where I'm sitting, looking at the log. Like, he just can't figure out what's going on like this. Then I got my bow on the ground. It has an arrow knocked into it already, but it's on the ground. I'm sitting down, and I'm having a seizure attack. You know, I just cannot put my release on. I mean, like, I'm just going all over the place, dude. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I don't even remember looking at the peep side. I just clip it somehow, drew it, and release him like this. Dude, and I drill him on the chest. He took off running and collapsed. And I was like, I'm going to have a heart attack. Like, this is happening. You know, like, I just killed a deer and they're going to find us both dead. Like, I'm going to be dead right here, you know? So I said, I got to get out of here. And I got out, man. And my man, my heart was pumping so hard. I remember I called my wife and I was like, honey, oh my God. And she's like, what happened? And I said, I killed him, you know? And she's like, are you sure that you didn't miss? I mean, what a bummer, you know? I was like, what? You know, I was like, what? I mean, like, come on, cheer me out. She's like, are you sure? You know, she's like, are you sure you didn't miss again? And I was like, I know, I swear to God, he's down, you know? And, well, I calmed down, drink me a water, and I said, okay, now I'm going to go back. And I go back and I get lost. Like, I don't know where I was sitting at. It's already dark. I don't remember where I was sitting. It's 1,000 logs that looks the same on the forest, you know? I don't know where I was sitting. I don't know where I shot him. And then here we go.
Is that a racist joke?
No.
So they all look the same?
On the darkness. You know?
On the dark, okay.
On the darkness, yeah. So, dude.
Okay.
I was like an hour just screwing around, about to cry again because I said, I didn't kill him. I probably missed, like she said. I most likely did. And I probably hit something else and make that indistinguishable noise, you know that you hit him. And dude, I don't know where I stopped. And I was like, this is bull crap. And I turned around and I was like within 2 feet from him. And for some reason, I couldn't see him. And that's when I lost him. Dude, I even shoulder mounted, dude. Like, it was my first buck ever, 2.5-year-old eight-pointer. And I went to the
dash. You shot him with a bow?
Yeah, on the ground.
Crap.
You know, on the ground. And dude, I took it to the taxidermy shop. And it was, I guess, some big shots out there. They're like, that's a small one. Yeah, you can let him a couple more years. I was about to cut somebody out, you know? Because I was like, dude, you just don't know how much this thing means to me. You have no idea. Like how important this buck is for me. Like, the guy's like, hey, buddy, so you sure you want to shoulder mount? You know, you can. And I was like, dude, you know, the reason that I came here to begin with is because I want to, it's not like I'm asking for like a welfare benefit taxidermy kind of project. You know what I'm saying? I'm paying you full price for it. You should just do your job, you know, and quit criticizing my harvest. And that thing is on my living room. Dude, that thing is on my living room. And it's a reminder for me. Every day that I look at that thing, I'm like, dude, it can look small for anybody else, but they have no clue how hard I work for that buck. And to be the same deer within 3 years apart, you know, that I miss him and then that I was able to kill him. Probably because he was dumb, you know. Most likely. Because if he was a big buck, he wasn't going to make the same mistake. That was a dumb buck, and I got lucky. But it was a valuable lesson right there, dude. And after that, that's when I really got into it. Not really got into it. I was already into it, but I didn't have the proper guidance, if we can say it like that. I was...
That was when you knew, okay, I want to chase this for a long time.
Yes, but I got to do it the right way. Because... Yeah. Walter, Brett, I don't know if you know, but, you know, when I first started hunting, well, like I said, my English was very limited. And I remember I was watching these DirecTV deer shows from the Promised Land, you know, where all they shoot is nothing but like 160s, 170s and such. And I was trying to replicate the things that they were doing, and it was absolutely wrong. And one of the things that I remember is I remember seeing spraying something on them. At the time, like I said, my English wasn't that good. And I thought that it was like deer scent. So it was scent killer. And I went to Walmart and I got myself a bottle of deer estrus. And I was spraying that crap on me. And I was like coughing, dude, like, you know, and I was like, this is strong, you know. But that's what I thought that they were doing.
Pungent.
Yeah. I was like, this thing's stout, you know. I was like, that's. And then I realized, like, hey, buddy, you've been doing it wrong. Because I was getting home, my wife was like, stop, you know, take your clothes off, throw them back there, you know.
I wish my wife did that.
Yeah. because it was strong. And then that's when I realized, like, oh, hey, okay, I have to change. And I started looking for Alabama Public Land Hunting and this and that. And that's how I came across your channel. And I was like, oh.
I said, this guy.
I said, this dude. I said, he would know, Jay. No, just kidding. No, but I mean, that's how it all started, to be honest.
Pablo's fun, man. It's always a blast hearing you talk just about these stories, man. Like, it's easy to take for granted these first year stories. I like hearing, man, how cool. I'm jealous that you get to experience this first year as an adult. Like, you get to remember that. You get to remember that moment. You get to live in that. First year was when I was 10, right? So it's like, that was a long time ago. I don't remember everything as well as I want to, but you get to.
I feel like it was yesterday, especially the first time that I killed my doe. It was this sense of pride, masculinity. I don't know how to explain it. I was like, I got it done.
American pride.
Yeah. I was like, America! You know? Now, that doe, she wasn't no big doe. This most likely a fawn.
The big one, or the first one, the very first year you killed?
Yeah, he's probably a fawn, a little bit of dumb fawn as well. Give me a shot, and I took it.
With a bow as well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I shot a fawn last year, so you ain't got to feel bad about it. I've been doing this for a lot longer than you have.
How many deer have you actually killed with a gun? Not too many.
Not too many, yeah. I was at two last year. And then
that's so cool to me, though.
Like five, mm-hmm. I would say five, and the rest has been with the bow.
I mean, that's just so different from most people's story, I think. You know, at least southern people.
Yeah.
Most southern folks shot their first deer with a gun. That's just kind of the way it was, you know.
Yeah.
Were you raising your hand?
30 out six, 25 yards.
Yeah.
Crushed.
Brett, what about you?
Greg.
Did I say Greg?
I thought you did. Did you say Greg or Brett?
I'm pretty sure I did Greg again. I'm sorry, dude. Yeah.
The first deer that I've ever harvested was with a 30-30.
Okay.
Gold trigger. Come on.
Uh-oh.
Because that's another thing.
Southern women.
It's different. It's way different when you walk in the woods with a family member. A sibling, papa, your dad, something like that. And you can actually learn as you go, watching them, mm-hmm. whatever they point at you and all that. But it's very difficult when you have a zero background and then you just go out there and you just don't know what to look for, where to go, or what to do. I mean, to be honest, it's like having a grown adult with a five-year-old mentality and just being like, just walk up in there and kill a deer. It's like, it's not that easy, especially in public, you know? And every year I learn something new, definitely do. Something I've been trying to learn a little bit more is patience. And I quit second-guessing myself so much, man, because I made a mistake one time, remember? I was up in a tree about 4 o'clock in the evening, and I was like, oh, man, I should have been on that tree back there. And I started climbing down, prime time, the dumbest thing that you can do, because I was second-guessing myself so much. And as I'm going down, there's a small buck, like a six-pointer, looking at me. And I remember this quote from you. When the sun hits their antlers, they look way bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked like a giant to me. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I doing? He would walk, like, literally within 10 yards from where I was. But for being anxious, not patient, and second-guessing myself, I made a critical mistake right there, you know? So I also learned a hard lesson that day, but I was happy.
It was just the sun, and he wasn't that big.
No, it was the sun, because as soon as he kept on running, because trust me, I watched him. As soon as he got in the shaded area, I was like, still, you know, a buck is a buck. And you know, and something, when I took the shot in that big deer, he was a good deer. And you guys, I'm pretty sure I show you guys, show y'all the video, you know. He was a good, he was a heavy buck.
The one that you didn't recover.
Yeah, he was like, what? I mean, his core is secondary, but it can give
He was probably like 125 inch deer, probably.
I showed him right again. You will second guess. I was at the upper 140s.
Oh, okay.
With a bow?
Yes.
That's a, you're looking at a Pope and Young. That's impressive. That's not just a regular deer.
I hadn't seen the video in a while.
Go ahead and zoom it in.
Not many people can say they've killed a bunch of Pope and Youngs.
Hard to tell. Mm-hmm. He's 130.
Okay.
For sure.
Hold it up to the camera, Pablo.
Hold on.
It's hard to tell because he's walking away. But he's a big deer, and I think that's the, like, you got the shot. You put yourself in the right spot. You got the shot. The majority of the equation.
Colson's got a rocking chair on top of his noggin.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the equation was got.
Mm.
Like, you had figured it out. Like, that was a public deer, and fellas, that's an area that is a tough one to hunt.
But the thing that got me with that buck, the thing that I learned the most, I don't know how to explain it. I hate it that I didn't kill him. You know, I definitely do that I wasn't able to recover. But at the same time, I feel very, very happy that it didn't happen. And the reason why is because I'm afraid that that could steer me on the wrong direction. But having one of those moments, still learning, and then I kill a deer out of nowhere, I know everything. And you quit being humble, you start getting cocky. You see what I'm saying? Like, you see where I'm going? I feel kind of glad because it was like, okay, I was able to put one foot on the big leagues. I was able to get a taste of it. And I also was able to get a taste of what and how it feels when you cannot recover. Because it happens and it will happen again. I mean, it's what it is. So I was very glad and very thankful for, like, this is a priceless, priceless lesson for me right here. And at the end of the day, the thing that happened with that buck, and it's one of the most crazy things that I've never seen it. I don't know if I'm going to get lucky enough to see it again. I was in a swamp. I used to walk away from that area until one day the water was down, and it was just a little bit of stretch that you can walk. On that area, there was tracks on the mud, and the water wasn't disturbed at all, so you can see crystal clear, you know. Then I realized that I'm walking away from the sun, like from an actual crossing area. I climbed in there. I had a big old doe walking out of the cat mark, like at the cattails, and a big one. I was going to shoot her. Out of nowhere, another one came out. But her tail was kind of like a halfway up. Wasn't like a straight up flag. It was like halfway up. So I was I was just without moving. I was like, am I being busted? Like, what's going on right now? And they stood up in there, that opening, for a minute or so, which is it seemed like an hour. And I don't know where an A-pointer came out, a good A-pointer. And I was like, oh, my God. And just kind of waiting because the does, they start walking towards me. So I was like, I'm going to shoot him and do like a train wreck. This giant came out of the swamp chasing that A-pointer away. I've never seen that before. The does took off running, and he started chasing him. My heart was about to come out of my chest, you know, because I was so pumped. And then the small deer runs away, and the big deer started running behind them, though. I mean, literally running, full jump. And that's when I was like, man. he never worried. He was at the most 20 yards. I remember when he was going up, that's when I shot to his kind of like a organ cavity. And it's a split of a second, but I can remember like if it was yesterday and with a high definition camera, as he was going down, that's when he got hit. And I said, I smoked him. And then he stopped and took off running the other way. And I said, I didn't. you know. I said, man, this is bad. And he stopped and he was hunched over and walking away, flickering the tail like this. I was like, he's feeling it, you know, but he ain't, like, he's not toasted. So I picked up my arrow and walked about 50 yards. It was good blood, but it was too dark, like really dark red. And at the time I had a little bit of knowledge. Well, not a little bit. I knew a little bit more what I was doing. I was like, this is not good. This could be liver, or this could be just straight up muscle. Sure enough, you know, it wasn't a lethal hit. But at the end of the day, it was a priceless experience for me. It was a priceless lesson to this is what happened when you step up on the big game, you know. And this is something that you guys know better about. Like, to me, it was my first experience. And after that, it just kept going uphill, like better and better and better. So,
well, I will say that like, it does. I mean, yeah, you do get better and you kind of learn to make a little bit better decisions, but I still make decisions like that where you're like, you just second guess yourself. Like, I don't think that ever goes away, right? Like, I have a good amount of confidence in the spots that I choose and, you know, whatever, but I'm still always second guessing, like, should I have been there? Should I have been here? Yeah. You just kind of have to be more okay with, like, maybe there was a better spot, but I'm here right now. You know what I mean?
This is what we got.
There's a balance between being flexible and changing and adapting, and also like doing that and being the kind of guy that can adapt, and also being the kind of guy that can just be confident that you know what you know and what you know works, right? Like, we know certain things that will work with the right amount of time. We know that. So you don't want to make too many big changes too fast, not give the things that always work a chance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, there is that fine line, that fine balance. I think that you find, like, the Jake Bushes kind of gravitate to, that they find themselves in there a lot. You know, cause I think all of us would say we question and second guess and do all that, but it's kind of, what do you do then? What do you do after that? Like, are you second guessing enough to actually make a move, or do you need to just
now wait it out? Yeah, now what I do, I try to, you know, have confidence in myself. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't matter, to be honest. Like, unless it's something really obvious, like, oh, this is it, you know. Unless it's that, I will confidently climb and be like, here it goes, nothing. This could be it, and it could not as well. I don't build castles on my mind, you know, thinking that right here, this is where I'm going to kill the biggest deer of my life, because it doesn't happen like that. You just can't do that, you know. Unless you're in a high-fence property, it's just not going to happen. So I try to be really patient. Pay attention to the subtle sign. That's something else. A little bit of browsing right here, a little bit of poop right there, maybe a couple tracks. You know, something that I have learned is that them beings, they don't really like to be leaving a lot of sign behind. They like to stay as elusive as they can, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've been catching up. Like, and suddenly, man, like, your eyes will just pick up on the things that before you used to just walk away from, or walk just right past them, you know. It's like in that area that I've been talking to you about, that I said that I want you to go out there with me. I know there's good deer right there. It has to. But, Brett, I haven't been able to find a rug on, two, almost 3 years now.
I don't pay much
for that. Dude, it's a nasty area. There's only one way in and one way out, unless you feel like, I don't know, MacGyver. And you can build a chopper out of a plastic toothpaste can or something, you know? Otherwise, one way in.
Think the deer use that to their advantage, knowing there's one way in, one way out.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're sitting there watching people.
I believe so. I definitely do.
And could you turn around and hunt them that way? Set up for them watching others?
I try one time, but unfortunately, it's so far down that you can go before you hit the private.
Yeah.
You know? And then the private is a boundary. And I know it's two things. They're going to be up there on the private. but they're going to be somewhere where they can see you and disappear before you even see them. So it's a,
you had to beat them there.
Yes. And that's a game that I've been playing in another spot. I remember I bumped a good buck, a really good one. And I just started thinking about, like, why was he here? Then I went back, actually, with Daniel. Remember? Yep. I don't know if you saw the video. I went back with Daniel, and it was bed, like the perfect bed, fresh with hair still on it. And this is like a few months back, like maybe 6 months ago. Dude, the way that he's bedding, he has a visual, like a mile, straight mile, all the way from the road to where he's at. And behind him is a bluff where he can just disappear in anywhere, any way that he wants. So I was like, okay, so this is a different game. This is a chess game. You know, I'm going to have to maybe start using the creek to my advantage, or maybe start trying to see if I can use people on my advantage. You know, that's something else that I learned. Pressure, if you get in the right spot, they might push them up to you, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something else too. Also, something that I have learned is the areas that you believe or you might think that is a dead place, that's where a good one could be just bedded down, watching everybody going by without even moving.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting thought. I've been thinking about it a lot lately in a lot of the areas that I hunt. The places where I have killed or seen the most big deer are usually the places that I don't see many deer. Mm-hmm. Like it'll be kind of like the one-offs, you know, like I killed a big buck a few years back. And to this day, that's the only day that I've been in there and seen a deer. I've never seen another deer from the tree in that spot. You know what I mean? Like, and there's not even a whole lot of sign in there. It just had, he was around, he was using it. It was his bedroom, but he just wasn't really like, it was almost like he wasn't attached to it.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't like laying down a whole bunch of stuff. And I think maybe in the early season, that could be a good tactic, is finding those beds that look like they're not just getting like pounded every single day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like definitely. They're not highly populated, yeah, but it might be populated by one
good one. Good that he one. Knows. Which is totally fine. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, and we're going back again to the point where scoring is just completely secondary. Like, to be honest, it's about the memory. And that's what I want to do right now. Like I said, I'm 34. And do you trust me? Everybody's like, don't worry. You know, when you're in your mid-30s, that's when you're in your prime. Dude, if this is my prime, I'm screwed, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, yes, I'm screwed, and I want to make it count, like, right now. You know what I'm saying? Because, oh, my God. Like, dude, one day I shot a spike, again, a mile and a half. Yeah, look at that flexing. Hey, I tell you what, Brad, look, you better call a plumber.
Oh. About to burst, you know?
No. Listen, I shot a spike, and I was, like, a mile and a half from my truck. And the high of the day, it was like 77. And dude, I start dragging that thing with my gear. And I was literally, and I'm not making this up, thanks to God that day I didn't have my whitey tighties. No, just kidding. I had my long boxers. And I was walking out with an orange vest on my boxers with my gear in my back, dragging a spike. As I was walking closer to the trucks, it was an older gentleman. And he looked at me like, what in the F is going on? Like, this dude, he has rubber boots, underwear, and an orange vest. Like, and I'm like sweating head to toe. And I say, hey, man, I got one, you know? He say, it got hot, isn't it? And I say, dang right, it did, you know? And he's like, let me help you out. Super nice gentleman, dude. He helped me out with the deer. I got him out and all that stuff. Again, I just didn't have my knife and broadheads. It was mechanical, so I wasn't able to.
Golly, what are you doing?
Do you have a knife?
We're just
I do. I'm gonna mail him a knife, and Parker, I want you to put it in the back.
We're gonna have to talk to our friends over at Join or Die Pod or Join or Die Knife Company.
Finger gun time, baby. Segway.
We're gonna have to get with them.
Yeah.
About a Pablo Escobar knife.
And put some kind of ad, like, don't be like this guy. And it'd be me walking out in underwear.
Well, let me tell you, they probably can because they can do custom work too. We might just have to make this a thing.
Yeah.
This might be your Christmas present.
That'd be nice.
SoCo.
But listen, he was such a nice guy that he helped me out. He had a camp, like a camper, small camper. He's a legit OG. He got soap, hand soap, water, all kinds of knives. You know, I was like, oh my God, you know, like you got so many knives and all, you know.
Did he have a trench coat? What, did he like open up a trench coat?
If he would have done that, then I'd be like, I'm in the wrong place, you know. But he even gave me his phone number and he said, stay in here. You're the only one that I have seen here for a while. Stay in this area. This is a good place. And I said, good. But a week later, he sent me a picture. I'm still got it right here of that. I'm pretty sure I sent it to you. It was a good 8-pointer. He killed him about a week later on the same general area. And he sent me that picture. And that meant a lot to me because somebody else could have been like, oh man, yeah, I just camped right here. It's not a lot of good deer back there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He was straight up honest with me because he was like a good deal. You know, he probably saw me so pumped and so happy with that little bit of spike. And he was like, good, you know, like good That's for awesome. You, you know? So yeah, man, definitely.
Pablo, bro, we appreciate you coming on. It's always a blast. Never really have a point. Never really have like an agenda. We just talk about good old fashioned deer hunting from your perspective, which is which is fun.
Before we leave, I got one more thing to say. And we discussed about this last season, but I want to see Brett and Walter's point. Last year was a very, very difficult year for everybody in general. Like really rough. What are you saying now?
I had a great year, man.
They're in different areas. Okay. They're in different areas than we are, though. So okay.
Yeah.
So it was a different
scenario.
Scenario. Yeah.
For us up here, it was very difficult because it was a lack of food source, in a very, very rough drought, if we can say it like that.
Yeah.
So everybody keeps saying about the rut. The bucks are not running. Bucks are not chasing. Those are not in heat, nothing like that. I discussed with Parker this idea because it's an idea. It's not a theory because a theory is pretty much like fed up, you know. But is it possible that because of the lack of such important nutrient, such an acorn, if we look at a doe as a mechanism, like as an organism, can that doe produce a less strong breeding cycle to like self-preservation? So in that way, you know, she minimized the chance of getting pregnant, knowing that she doesn't know how hard or how long the winter is going to be. And if she gets pregnant, she's going to have to consume twice as much. And she's struggling already. So can that be a factor? Like the lack of food can trigger like a self-preservation on her organism and being like, not happening this year. Or it might happen, but be so briefly that a buck could miss it, you know?
I will say this. I would almost be positive there is somebody listening to this that knows the answer to that question.
Because I want to make sure that everybody knows that I'm not a veterinarian. And I'm not a biologist. I have no knowledge when it comes to wildlife management. So this is just an idea that popped in my head.
Yeah, drought. I mean, the idea that in a drought year, a doe can preserve or self-preservate, I guess would be the right word. She's not going to have as much.
For me, I have no idea. I could not tell you, but I'll pass that off to Walter Google Box over there.
Well, what I know to be true is that it. I mean, I'm purely speculating.
Hang on, he's getting a phone call. Hang on.
Yeah.
Three seconds.
Hold on one second, guys. Hey, my boss is calling. Hang on.
Sorry, you probably lost Pablo, but this is a Marco Polo another inside stuff joke. That happens every day.
So I would find it really hard to believe that there's not enough food in those areas to sustain them still. I mean, if you had like a series of events where there was no food during the spring, no food during the summer, and then a hard mass disappeared, maybe, but you're not dealing with like crazy hard winters like you are up in the Dakotas where that could like really have a factor. I think what you're more likely to see, because they've gone all summer with an ample amount of browse, you go into the fall, the browse starts to kind of wane, and then you have the acorn drop. I think what's more likely is they would breed, and then there wouldn't be enough food to sustain both the mom and the fetus. And what's most likely is that she would abort the fetus instead of, you know, just by, you know, a lack of calories. I don't think that you have enough of a pinch point between the end of summer and December for food source wise, especially with all the corn feeders you all probably have on private surrounding a lot of the areas you hunt. I wouldn't use that as a strategy, but I'm probably wrong.
But man, I don't know about exactly your area, but like, just my thoughts on the thing is, I don't think acorns for the Marco group, but I don't think that's enough to, like, I don't think that's a big enough food source to really make that big of a difference. Is deer eat so much browse and leaves on trees. They'll eat tips off of tree limbs and just all kinds of woody browse. Like, acorns are only for a small amount of time during the year.
Yeah.
You know, there's more food source in a cutover than there are in just big timber.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Barrier Islands in Southeast Georgia, and they have these monstrous deer populations where basically the one point in the 90s and the 2000s, the state of Georgia was desperate. They were like, please just come shoot these deer. We've got too many deer. There'd be a browse line in the trees about 6 feet tall. And when you would drive down the road, just like cows, everything beneath there would be completely void of browse if it was digestible, or even remotely digestible. So I think realistically, Brett's probably pretty square on the money there. I think what it definitely could impact, though, is your fawn recruitment rate the next year. I think you could definitely see a fawn drop with weak fawns or scattered fawn drop. And then as a result, you see a negative result the next couple of years when it comes to the amount of deer on the landscape. I could see that being a thing for sure.
Yeah.
Pablo, do you hunt much around like cutovers? Because I'd feel like in that situation, I'd be looking for the best food source, which would be something possibly like a cutover or something.
Yeah, there's not many around. The few that out there that we have usually gets so crowded, like there's a real, and now it makes perfect sense. You know,
or maybe the deer are hugging the property lines more because they're getting supplemental feed.
That's going to be the case in pretty much most big woods scenarios. You're not going to the big public woods are not going to carry the amount of deer that the big woods are going to carry in the places where they can bait on private land. You know what I'm saying? Like Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky,
South Carolina,
a lot of the places that have these big woods, you know, kind of vibes.
Yeah.
The private land can bait. So, I mean, I was telling, I can't remember who it was. It may have been Walter. It may have been somebody else. But we were talking about, like, seriously, maybe over 95% of the deer that I've killed have been coming off of private land.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they've walked onto public. And I watched them do it.
Yeah.
I think that's another one of those kind of no-brainer things for big woods southern hunting.
Yeah, when I killed a spike, it was really close to private. when I opened his content, I wanted to see what he was eating, and I opened his stomach, and he got corn. You know, he got them golden nuggets in there. And I was like,
yeah,
it's going up there, coming back.
I just always assume if there's private, if I'm in Alabama, if there's private, it's probably got some corn on it somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, their whole mentality is if you don't corn it, you won't have the deer. So, they're putting it out even if they really don't believe in it. I just think that there's this baseline assumption that you just have to do it.
Well, yeah. we kind of prove that point.
Yeah.
That's where we're all hunting is the edges of those places that are corning the crap out of it.
Every year, but one that I killed this year had come off a private at some point.
Yeah.
I would say you look at the private as the designated destination food source. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you look for public for the thickest area on public because they're going to come off that private because all the people driving their four wheelers and trucks. They're going to come bed on the public.
I think that's why we get so fired up about feed trees is because that's one of the, that kind of season right through there is one of the only times when, like on public, one of the main food sources or destination food sources in these type of areas, that's when it's on public, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a little more fun.
Yeah,
definitely. Because you're not just hugging property lines. At that point, you may be finding all the deer sign is right in the smack dab middle of the public and they're traveling from this little thicket over to it that they've just moved into for the short little season while the white oaks are dropping. It's like that's kind of the fun part about early season is finding those little spots like that. But man, whenever food starts drying up,
you got to start hugging the proper lines.
And you've got yellow acorns out there and food plots. You know, like you just they've got to be important to anybody's tactics, I think, in the South on these types of places. Anyways, it's a different story. You know, when you're talking about some parts of Tennessee and Kentucky where a lot of the public has got these agriculture and farmland with the destination spots there, it's a little bit different. You know what I mean? Like I'm not always hugging property lines in that scenario. Because I don't have to, because those destination spots are kind of all throughout the public area.
Yeah.
But man, it's a good conversation, man. It's a lot of fun. I'm getting fired up. I don't know about y'all.
Me too.
I'm getting fired up. I leave day after tomorrow for the start of this tour. We start hunting next week. Boys.
So let's do this, man. Before we get carried away, we got a little bit of housekeeping we got to do on the backside here. We got a couple people we need to give some love to. We're going to start with Joining Dye Knives. Parker has raved for quite some time. And in fact, on Parker's old feed, he had Brent on, and we were recently asked if we've had him on the podcast. And I answered no initially. We're going to get Brent back on. He's actually part of our Discord group now, Parker. I don't know if you saw that.
I did see that. Yeah.
And so we created a whole little forum just for him to answer questions for knives. And he's been answering a lot of random questions. I had a lot of ignorant knife knowledge that I had just acquired, but I don't know how to test it. And I've just been throwing it in that group, and then it starts a conversation amongst a variety of people. And so if you're interested in talking to him, again, plug for Patreon. But if you want a craftsman knife, a high quality knife, go to Join or Die Knives and use the promo code SOCOHUNT, and it'll get you 10% off their order. So we're really happy to be working with them this year. And
Pablo, bro, there's a knife somewhere with your name on it.
Come on.
Definitely.
I'm gonna have to. We need to find
one of those.
Yeah, you do. We both do. And then obviously we got to give love to Bowtech. Parker, you and Matt had a blast last year with them.
Bro, listen, I'm going into the season with this carbon one,
which is sweet, by the way.
Yeah, dude, look at that thing back there, just shining like a beauty. I'm going into the season more confident with my bow than I've ever been. I answered a lot of questions. Of course, the video I just put out was a gun hunt, but a lot of people, you know, I mean, it was just a rough hunt. But even last year with a bow, it was tough, man. I just had a tough season dealing with target panic. got this bow, this Carbon One, which is a 30-inch axle to axle, and I think it has largely increased my shooting. And dude, a freaking carbon bow, man! Like it shoots like a carbon bow.
Look at that!
Come on. Wonderful. It's wonderful, dude. I'm so excited. I'm pumped about this season. I really am. Headed out with Tethered. Looking forward to, which we just released a new episode with Tethered.
Yep.
With the guys from Tethered. I listened to it today, actually, as we're recording this. It dropped today. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to be on that episode. But man, let me tell you, what a freaking company. Walter, like, these guys, when not just as business owners, and they don't just make cool stuff. They're just cool people, dude.
Like, and this is an opinion from a total stranger to him and all that, because I haven't got the pleasure to meet quite a bit of them. But the few that I got to meet down there, man, seriously, kind people. Like, this is, I get it. They got the logistics side and the business side, but it seems like they actually, it doesn't seem, they actually care more about your regular hunter than what all these big companies will do. Like, seriously. And they do try to develop their best product based on, you know, what's going to be the best for them guys out there so they can have a blast. So this is just something I want to say, because it's the truth. You know,
yeah.
That's the vibe that I got. They were so kind, so nice with me. So
have you gotten to see that carbon?
Not yet.
Predator yet?
No, not yet. I got the Predator, but I can already tell a carbon Predator.
Yeah, brings the drip. About like
we're talking about like a Lambo, the Lambo saddle.
Pablo, the bracket at the top of the carbon fiber.
Yeah,
Predator. That was a brainstorming idea that me and Ernie had at the 2019 Deer Expo, and I've been waiting for them to roll it out. And they kicked the can down the road until they rolled out the Predator platform. And it's sweet because you can put, what they did was they took the bracket that goes at the top of the tree that you can kind of put your foot against, and they blew it out to where you can use it as another point of leverage as you go around the tree, or as you spin around, you can get your foot on it real solid. That thing is going to be so sweet.
Nice. That's Walter saying, hey, that was my idea.
Yeah.
That was what that was.
Yeah. That's a really good idea. You
know? Yeah.
And those snacks, they were for your trip, not for the day, but I guess they're gone.
Oh, y'all listen. So here's the best thing about, it's not the best thing about Pablo, but it's a, it's a great quality of Pablo. He brings me all these like Mexican candies and like,
Hispanic,
yeah, whatever. Sweet. This one's caramel corn. Alboroto.
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 Yeah, you have to like pronounce the T.
You have to pronounce it right. Good.
But anyways, dude, I was like, oh man, he's leaving, so I'm just gonna bring him something so he can snack on his way up there. It didn't last long.
Are in danger.
But boy, it's late.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I need to get some sleep. Pablo, thanks for coming on.
No, this is my pleasure, man.
Standing invite, Pablo. I speak for everyone here and everyone who listens. Anytime you want to put a mic in your face, drive over to Parker's house, and we'd love to have you on, man.
Man, I appreciate that a lot. It means a lot to me. And like I said, you guys are amazing. I just don't have enough words to describe, you know, how thankful I am, you know, how grateful for everything that we have, everything that I get to do now. So, I mean, Thank you all for having me here, man. And I definitely learned a lot. I did. And I will be asking around. Trust me. You know? I'll be like, I don't know what to do now. You know? What would you do? Screw this. I'm doing it.
Walter, would you do us the honors? Would you lead us on out of here?
Well, guys, I appreciate each and every one of you listening. I don't have an outro for this series yet for the Southern Collective, so I'm going to end it with a classic. Until next time, you guys get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.
Yes, sir.